Hey everybody, this is Andy, aka Love Retro BTW, across Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. I do a podcast every Saturday called Cafe BTW, a morning gaming podcast, a retrospective look at the wonderful world of retro gaming, from interviews to guests. Join us every Saturday, like a Saturday morning cartoon, starting at 8 a.m., 11 a.m. Eastern. Also, if you're on Twitter, please join the brand new retro gaming community, a place to share, connect, and show your love for the retro gaming community. All the links are down below. And remember, enjoy the Gamers Week podcast.
This time on Gamers Week podcast.
McDonald's unleashes the grease-resistant McCrispy gaming chair. To keep your quarter pounder toasty, phrasing, and ready for deployment straight into your mouth between gaming rounds. Holy crap. The other notable selling point is that the plush support features a grease-proof treatment on the leather materials. So any stray squirts of ketchup and mustard can be... I read that and I didn't see the ketchup and mustard afterwards. I'm like, oh...
What are we eating tonight, Donnie?
A Twix bar, because I'm a fat, tubby, fat.
You're the kind of person that bites both of them at the same time?
No. No, not even close.
I'm not a monster.
I know. I don't care that the dog is dead in Resident Evil 4, but I'm not a monster.
No, here we go. Here we go.
Boo this man. Boo.
That's going to carry me to my days.
Welcome to the Gamers Week podcast. Like the name says, we analyze the best, worst, and weirdest headlines of the past week in the video game industry. This is episode 47. Today is Wednesday, November 9th, 2022. My name is Ryan, aka Retro Game Brews, and I will be your host for this evening. But that doesn't mean I don't have two excellent people who are going to join me. As usual, I've got a gentleman who's currently in negotiations with the Lord of Darkness himself for a contract extension on his soul for just one more year of amazing retro pickups, Donnie G Retro. Donnie, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, and I'm quite shocked that he's actually negotiating with me. He's not shutting it down. He's not saying, I've already got your soul, dude. What else do you have to give me? He's not that bad.
Once you get to know him.
But you did, to be fair, challenge him to a rock-off.
I did, and he lost. It was a DJ and beatbox rock off, and he just sucks at that. He was still playing a fiddle for some reason.
Just feel like, all right, rap informer. And the devil just went, nope, you're good.
Yeah, he's like, I'm done.
And I also have with me a woman who is trending towards being sacrificed in a Mayan-style ceremony at her CrossFit club if she doesn't up her burpee game. Blue Williams. Blue, how you doing tonight?
I'd like to, make some sort of clever joke, but you are actually correct. I am falling towards the bottom of the class. And in a few months, you'll no longer hear from me.
Are you like Ralphie's little brother from Christmas Story, where you can't put your arms down?
In reverse, because I can't put my arms up.
Never go reverse, Ralphie.
Oh,
I don't know what that means, but it sounds really good.
All right. So why don't we take a look at our reviews, reactions, and requests for the week? Starting with Ducks in Disguise. Great episode. I hadn't considered the advantages of a weapon that also deploys popcorn and bubblegum. That makes two of us ducks.
Then you're never without a snack. I don't understand why you guys wouldn't have thought of this.
But like a gun? So you got to stand away from it in order to get your snack?
No, you just shoot it right in your face. Does it have a dial or a switch for popcorn and bubblegum? Or does it like come out at the same time?
No, you have to pick one.
Okay. Okay. Good.
Well, I just lost my teeth because I just got shot in the face again with bubblegum. Next up from Terry Baca. Congrats, Retro Game Brews, on doing something I never thought possible, making me miss Rochester. Great episode all, but especially great hearing more about the gaming museum. Terry, thank you very much. I enjoyed it, so I'm so glad that you enjoyed our little tale. And then finally from Go Hobo Go, who is downloading from Console Plus, Iowa? That's my hometown. I'm downloading from Omaha right now. Sir, you have some homework. You need to drive over to your hometown.
Next time you go home, you got to find out, because episode 45, we had 58 downloads randomly from Council Bluffs, Iowa. And then episode 46, we had zero. So I don't know. I think really the only conclusion is that it was the local chapter of PETA being pissed off at Donnie. And we'll never hear from Council Bluffs again.
Or it was the Russians using a VPN to look like they're downloading it from Council Bluffs, Iowa.
Man, the Russians, they're always downloading our episodes.
We're very big in Russia.
And now, it's time for the
Very Important Poll.
No, kill it with fire.
It's hiding underneath your bed, Blue.
Man, scary dolls. Scary dolls are a thing that just... No.
I have never, ever met somebody with like actual real dolls in their room or in their house. And that's just instant shock.
Really? You don't have like any older lady relatives that like to keep dolls around?
Nope.
Grandma used to have a creepy one on her bed.
See?
And its eyes would reflect the clock in their room, you know?
Uh-huh.
So it's like bright green eyes always.
That wasn't the clock, I hate to tell you. That was the demon.
Every Monday on Twitter, we post our VIP, a very important poll. If you'd like to participate, follow us on Twitter at GamersWeekPC. So the question for this week was, who is your favorite mad scientist in video games? Coming in third was Hojo from Final Fantasy VII with 14.5%. Following up in second was Dr. Wily from the Mega Man series at 34.2%. And taking down the top spot so far this week was Dr. Robotnik from the Sonic the Hedgehog series with 39%. Some of you said other with 12.3%, so let's take a look at some of the comments from the poll. At Sir Boring Old Fart said Professor Von Krippelspack from Conker's Bad Fur Day. He convinced the Panther King to kidnap a red squirrel to be used as a table leg. How much more evil can you get?
That reads like a Mad Lib. I know. He convinced the Panther King to kidnap a red squirrel to be used as a table leg.
Mom, I did it. But he invented the anti-gravity chocolate, so I guess he's not that bad. At Engage's Brain says Dr. Fred Edison from Maniac Mansion, of course. At Knock Emulator says, nobody commented Dr. Neo Cortex yet? Well, let me be the first. At Dream Crashed says, has to be Eggman, just the right amount of mad scientist. And at Mind of Mercy says, Dr. Boskanovich from Tekken, dude's fart is an attack. So, based on the question for this week, Ryan, who did you pick?
I'm going to go with Hojo from Final Fantasy VII.
Because kids go, Hojo. Hojo. Sega.
And you know, sir, that Howard Johnson is the family vacation hotel. And kids go, Hojo. Hojo. With a Sega.
I do find it funny that it's his name, of course, is a crappy hotel chain. Do Howard Johnson still exist?
I have no idea, but since... We talked about that commercial one time. Now I can't not see it every time I look at that name. That's how I read it.
Hojo.
Yep. Sega.
And this rolls off the tongue. It doesn't. It's like Dr. Motel 6 from Final Fantasy VII. We'll leave the light on for you.
But I do like Hojo because he is very much. We'll say he does. He just doesn't give a crap, right? He's very apathetic. He has no emotions for it. He's just a mad scientist. He also knows how to party, heading out to Casa del Sol, chilling with all the babes on the beach. So good for him, right? And then eventually he turns into like the Akira version of himself and goes all big, and you got to fight him and eventually kill him. But
geez, Ryan, spoiler alert.
Right. If you haven't played this 25-year-old game.
Right. Blue, what about you for this week?
I went with Albert Wesker from Resident Evil series. He is a recurring villain in the series who feels that humankind has just reached a dead end. And so he thinks that the species needs a little kick in the butt as far as its evolution is concerned. And he feels that he's the right man to do that. And one of the things that I like about Wesker is that he's willing to put his body on the line. And so he always ends up turning himself into some sort of horrible, grotesque monster that you have to defeat. Right. But you got to admire a man willing to put his body on the line for his beliefs.
Absolutely.
So what about you, Donnie?
Mine was a toss-up this week. Dr. Fred Edison from Maniac Mansion was one of the first ones that I thought of, but also Dr. Neo Cortex from the Crash Bandicoot series. I love their work, both guys. So both games are very fun to play for me. I like it's a comical type of mad scientist thing, I'm going to do evil things to people in a real life setting, like jam a probe up their butt and turn them into an evil, grotesque monster that chases people down and harms everybody.
I don't recall the probes going up the butt.
That might have been my own perspective. Who knows?
Fantasy.
Perspective, fantasy, same thing, man.
I just love the fact that Neo Cortex has just an enormous N on his forehead.
Yeah. It's like, we already get he's a mad scientist, okay? You can tell by the lab coat, the wild hair and stuff, but the N, like, that took it to an extreme. Like, we need something unique for this guy.
You have to build that personal brand. I understand what he's going for.
And I wonder, is that a tattoo? Is that just like a stick-on thing? Or can he take it off every night? Or does he have to polish it continuously?
He's got one of those mannequin heads that he puts the N on. Like, time to go to bed, Neo. Walks out of the house and forgets the N. Oh, no, I got to go back home.
Honey, do you know where I put my N?
Except in Where's My Super Suit vibe.
You're right.
Where's my super suit? Why did you need to know?
That encapsulates it. Most of my conversations when I can't find something at my house. All right, so why don't we go ahead and shout out our patrons for this week.
We couldn't do what we do without the help of our gorgeous patrons. Here are the generous folks supporting Gamers Week on Patreon, and we have two new patrons to announce. Woo! A big thank you and welcome to Rerun Gamer and number one Blue Sick Voice Fan.
Yes, finally.
Rolls right off the tongue. I'll try to talk like this a little bit for you guys every now and again. They'll be joining Random Retro Dude, Princess Kitty Mew Mew, Rai Rai's Secret Best Friend, Mega Retro Man, Gamatroid, Emo Esk, Bill Tucker, Rye Bread's number one fan, Fruitcake's number one stan, Ducks with Thick Thighs, The Wizard of Zardoz, Clayman71, Great Siaman81, BNT Zilla Guy, Geek With That, Crunchy Kong, Sheriff Snacks, Frank Grande, JNL Game, Love Retro BTW, Steven Sand, Ramboski, Terry Kinnair, Ducks in Disguise, Jim and Colleen, Games with Coffee, Davey PGH, The Redox PDX Family, including Shannon and Luke, and Zach Huge Thanks. If you like what you heard today, and we really hope you do, please consider joining us on Patreon. Your support helps cover the cost of producing the show, as well as other cool stuff we'll be doing, like prizes and giveaways. You'll also gain access to our weekly patron-only bonus cast called Gamers Week Uncut, Patrons with Benefits. Visit patreon.com/gamersweek or follow the link in the show notes to learn more. And if you've ever wanted to know where we come up with our random introductions at the top of the show, they're almost always from the uncut episode.
Like 99.9%.
Right. So
you're missing out, man.
It's comedy gold over there.
In the words of Arnold, do it now. Sign up with our Patreon.
I'm pretty sure that was the original draft of the script.
Of course, right? All right, so why don't we go ahead and jump into our headlines for the week. Our headlines segment is, of course, proudly sponsored by the Retro Game Club podcast. It's a fantastic family-friendly retro gaming podcast. In each episode, Rob and Hugh pick two games to play and discuss, as well as news, interviews, and other topics. Right now, they're talking about NASCAR driver who qualified for a race by moving up two spots at the end of the final lap using a wall riding technique he learned playing NASCAR 2005 on the GameCube when he was 8. Visit them at retrogameclub.net or follow the link in the show notes. That is such an awesome story.
Yeah,
it is awesome. But like, if I tried to drive in real life how I drive in Mario Kart, like, that would be pure chaos. That would be terrifying.
Get pulled over and be like, what?
I learned this when I was 8. What do you want?
From GameSpot, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 hits $1 billion in revenue in 10 days, faster than any past COD title. Activision Blizzard has announced that Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 has surpassed $1 billion in global sell-through revenue since its release on October 28. Modern Warfare 2 made $1 billion faster than any previous Call of Duty game, surpassing the previous record holder, which was 2012's Black Ops 2, which made $1 billion in 15 days. This follows Activision's previous announcement that Modern Warfare 2 earned $800 million in global sell-through revenue in 3 days. Take-Two's Grand Theft Auto V remains the fastest-selling game of all time, based on launch revenue, as the game minted $1 billion in revenue in 3 days. Activision also pointed out that Modern Warfare 2 players have collectively logged more than 200 million hours of game time and played more than 1 billion matches. And I am one of them. The incredible momentum driving Modern Warfare 2 is a direct reflection of the energy and passion of the Call of Duty community, Call of Duty GM Johanna Ferry said. As we look ahead to an unprecedented level of support for Modern Warfare 2 and Warzone 2.0's launch next week, we are motivated to deliver again for the best player community in the world. While Modern Warfare 2 is expected to have a massive year for commercial success, Bandai Namco's Elden Ring will finish 2022 as the best-selling game in the US, according to the NPD. Elden Ring released back in February, though, so it's not a perfect or fair comparison. As Ferry stated, Warzone 2.0 will be released on November 16th, and it's expected to have a big launch. Another new Call of Duty game, Warzone Mobile, is set for release in 2023.
Woo! Warzone Mobile!
Yay! Something I'll never touch.
Right. Had to include it in there, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
So this must be a relief for Activision, considering how poorly Vanguard did.
Right.
Yes, and I think because of them taking it back to like a normal modern day setting, that's what's bringing their player base back to it. Nobody wants a World War II shooter anymore. It's done. It's played out. It's stretched thin. The horse has been beat to death so much that it's like jelly. So I don't know why they continue to go back to that type of setting. When you started playing Vanguard, or if you went to Caldera and you had the World War II weapons that bounced more than Richard Simmons trying to work out, it was not fun. Like everything was smooth with the original Warzone and Verdansk, and having different accessories on your weapon that made it smoother, that made fighting much more crisp. And this was just setting it back like decades. And you're like, what is this piece of crap? And then, not to mention the fact that they're like, oh, all that stuff that you earned and you bought when we were in Verdansk, guess what? Those skins, you can't use them in Vanguard because it doesn't make sense to have this outfit in this setting. And people lost their freaking mind. And I was one of them. I'm like, wait a second. Now, I'll be honest, in the essence of full disclosure, I did spend a little bit of money on skins and stuff. And I think it was maybe $20 at most.
This podcast is a place of honesty. Thank you, Donnie, for sharing with us.
It's not judgment free, though.
I didn't say that. I just said it was a place of honesty.
I feel like I can be myself with you two guys. So, yes, I did spend a little bit of money on it. And I was pissed off whenever Vanguard hit And we went to Caldera, and I tried to load up my skin. I was like, oh, you can't use that. Like, what do you mean? What? So when do I get to use it? Oh, you have to go play multiplayer. Well, that doesn't make any sense because I purchased this specifically for Warzone. And now I'm playing Warzone, and you're telling me I can't use it. And they bent the knee, and they said, oh, okay, all right, man. Yeah, you got us. You can go ahead and use it. Yeah, it doesn't make sense, but whatever. And then slowly but surely, they started reintroducing futuristic weapons and stuff like that, and the regular weapons that you could use in Caldera. And as much as I would have liked it, I wanted to see us go back to Verdansk. I really did. But in a week, it won't matter because Caldera will be gone out of our dreams forever, or our nightmares, and we'll have a brand new map.
Well, I will say this, though, when it comes to Call of Duty. I know I had said it on a previous podcast. Well, why can't you just make another one? The fact that they sold like a billion units in like less than 2 weeks.
Right.
I think I know why now.
Right. With the popularity of Warzone, I think people were wondering if there was still a market for the classic Call of Duty annual releases. And then Vanguard did so poorly. I think a lot of people pointed to be like, see, people only want Warzone now. But I think this proves that that was perhaps a premature opinion to be throwing around.
Yeah, and I think Donnie nailed it here where, you know, the differences as far as gameplay and the weapons that you have to choose from is probably the biggest factor when it comes to that. So it sounds like to me like Vanguard was not a disappointment because of the gameplay itself, but just because of the tools that you had at your disposal.
Right. Tools and probably story, which I didn't pay attention to the story in Vanguard. I couldn't tell you what it was about. Mm-hmm. Them actually remaking Modern Warfare 2. Like, I started playing the campaign. I was like, huh, I don't remember this part. Well, that's because it's brand new. Like, the most of the story is brand new. And because it's also, again, in that modern setting, I think that's what people want nowadays. Mm-hmm. And getting a good story from the campaign, I think, is also something that people want. And I just don't know if Vanguard had it.
Is it a visual upgrade?
I think they did use a different engine for Modern Warfare 2 than what they did for the original. Well, of course, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. But yeah, it's the graphics look great, but it's not like it was a significant upgrade over what it was for the game that was released with Warzone. In my opinion, that's just my opinion.
And honestly, that's probably going to be par for the course.
And that's the thing. You get, like, take a sports game, for example, when there's a release every single year and there's no significant upgrades or anything like
careful,
that.
Careful, Donnie. Your bias is showing.
Yeah.
All right. Next up from VGC, Final Fantasy 16 is a PS5 exclusive for 6 months, Sony marketing claims. Final Fantasy 16 will be a PS5 exclusive for at least 6 months after its summer 2023 release. That's according to a new marketing video published by Sony on Monday, which features Final Fantasy 16 footage along with the disclaimer, Final Fantasy 16 is anticipated summer 2023 PS5 exclusive for 6 months. The confirmation potentially paves the way for a PC port of Final Fantasy 16 in 2024. To date, the title has only been announced for PS5. Curiously, the game's 2020 reveal trailer did mention a PC version, but this reference was removed from later versions of the video. Recent franchise entries, such as Final Fantasy VII Remake Intergrade, eventually did make their way to PC. Final Fantasy VII Remake's 12-month PlayStation exclusivity period was due to end in April 2021. However, this was seemingly extended by 6 months with the release of PS5's Intergrade version in June 2021. In a recent interview, Final Fantasy 16 producer Naoki Yoshida told Famitsu that Final Fantasy 16's release date will be announced later this year. Yoshida also claimed the game is now nearing the final stages of development. With regards to development, the team has turned the corner and entered the home stretch and is currently concentrating its efforts on debugging, tweaking, polishing, and optimization, he said.
I thought we don't do exclusives at PlayStation.
You got us. You got us.
We never said that. We didn't say
what?
That.
What?
Right.
They said that.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Right. And you know, it did its job. When this current gen was released, and when it came time to decide between a PS5 and an Xbox Series X, it was exactly this game, Final Fantasy 16, mm-hmm. that got me to go PS5 over Series X. And wow. then, of course, imagine my disappointment when Square Enix has gone all in love with NFTs and all that kind of nonsense. And then some of the earlier Final Fantasy 16 trailers made me get excited for the game, especially the ones that showed all the classic summons from the series, like Shiva, like Bahamut, those kind of characters. And then they released a trailer that just focused on the 5 different nations and the politics between them. And I was like, oh my God, this is boring.
Real life Senate simulator.
Yeah, I'm still really on the fence about this game. I don't know what to think about it. I don't know if I'm going to get it. Yeah.
But I do find it interesting that the exclusivity of it is only going to be 6 months this time around.
Is it? Or is it going to be extended if Square Enix decides to release, you know, new parts to it?
When the PS5 Pro comes out? But I think that is an indication, at least, that they are more open to this idea of kind of sharing games with the PC marketplace much sooner than maybe they have in the past. So that's a pivot from how they've mostly conducted themselves up until this point. But I think that maybe they're starting to recognize that, hey, you know what? We can still make money off of this PC thing. Crazy.
I guess this PC thing's going to stick around after all.
Who would have thought?
Do you think that the reasoning behind doing so is because they don't see the PC as a direct competitor?
Probably.
Yeah, in all intents and purposes, it's probably not a direct competitor anyway. Right. I wouldn't fault them in making that assumption.
Yeah, I think PC people, by and large, tend to be PC people. And so couldn't blame Sony for looking at that as an untapped market. I know, of course, there are those Sony fans that have gone and thrown their PlayStations out the top story of their apartment building because Sony dared to release some of their beloved exclusives on PC, but pretty sure those people are few and far between.
And I'm pretty sure those people have probably bought another PlayStation after they did that.
Probably. Yeah. Going back to the score, like, oh, hey, I thought you already bought a PS5, Steve. My cat stepped on it.
Like, imagine you were friends with a guy at the store and he saw your, like, TikTok video of you breaking.
Right, because of course you couldn't do it without getting the views for it.
Of course, right. Of course. And then you walk in there and he's like, hey, look who's back.
Yeah, did you get $600 worth of clout from that TikTok?
No.
That's funny. I mean, I have no opinion on this one because obviously I don't own a PS5. And Dottie, do you have any desire to play this game?
You're asking the wrong person. I have zero. I have not been interested in a Final Fantasy game, I think, since Final Fantasy X. Now, I'll go back and play the originals, 2, 3.
Six.
Any of the newer ones? No, not for me. Final Fantasy is all... it's a mixture of the classic wizards and thieves and stuff like that, which is great, but now
not
it's
more.
No, not definitely. It's a bastardization. And
whoa, at Donnie G Retro.
Yeah, come
it's
at me.
It's reinvented itself, oh. You know? It had a midlife crisis. Now it's, you know, exploring new options, new relationships, new looks for itself.
It's trying to put itself out there.
Right.
All right, next up from Nintendo Life, Sega is hiring someone to help keep Sonic's lore in check. I'm updating my resume.
No more kissing humans.
Is Sonic the Hedgehog's lore more confusing than a Zelda timeline? Probably not. But there has been a lot of games, comics, TV shows, and movies, and not all of them are tied together. So Sega has said enough is enough, and the company is now hiring for a Sonic the Hedgehog lore master. Yes, really, Sega of America has posted a job listing for associate manager lore for the Sonic team over on LinkedIn. The job is located at the company's Burbank office in California, and you'll need to be able to commute to and work from the office 2 days a week, with the remaining workdays being remote. The lucky candidate will be reporting to, and this is a real job, the director of lore and creative strategy. That just sounds like a modern day wizard.
It's like, yeah, it sounds like something you'd read in Harry Potter.
Exactly. Now, if you're an outsider, you must be confused. Sonic the Hedgehog has lore? The short answer is yes. From the 1991 Sonic the Hedgehog to this year's Sonic the Hedgehog 2 movie, most people have a hard time keeping up. There's Sally the Acorn, Manic, and Sonia, Sonic's sibling, and Sonic's stint in a band. Don't even get us started on the time that Sonic and Mega Man crossed over in Worlds Collide and Worlds Unite alongside tons of other Sega and Capcom properties. So yes, Sonic's lore needs taming, and you might be the person for the job. Head over to the LinkedIn listing to find out more about the job.
A dream job comes along once, maybe twice in a lifetime. And there is, I'd say, probably a handful of people out there who know their Sonic lore, who have it in check, that could just tell you, well, no, I mean, the name of Sonic's cousin isn't really Sonia, it's Sonia. Like they have the inflection of the name.
I see this being a group job interview where they just take like 10 people, stick them in a room together and watch them try to one-up each other with actually facts.
Yes.
And see who emerges as the victor and just keep pinning the victors against each other until only one remains.
Oh my God. Can we get that on pay-per-view?
Please. I would watch that.
I would so watch that. I think they should live stream this process.
Like, imagine if you got kicked out first, how embarrassing that would be, too.
You could never show your face online again.
Nope. Everybody would go back and roast every single post that you've made on every social media platform. Like, this guy doesn't know shit about Sonic.
Remember the time that you asked out first at the Sonic competition?
Yeah.
I wonder, like, how would you list your qualifications for this on your resume? Like, how would you make it sound serious?
Huh.
I've 100%ed every Sonic game.
Well, that doesn't mean jack squat. You can 100% all you want. That doesn't mean you know the lore backwards and forwards.
No, but I would think it would be a necessary qualification. If you haven't played the games yourself.
No, screw
can
that.
Can you be trusted with the lore of the entire IP?
Sure, I've got YouTube at my disposal.
Oh, so you're trusting other people and getting your information secondhand? Donnie.
Work smarter, not harder, Blue.
Taking shortcuts is not something you want in the person in charge of this entire franchise.
I disagree.
It's a position that demands integrity.
No comment.
I'm thinking about that TA team that has to go through all of these applications.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's anything before this that could qualify you, as I think we kind of alluded to. There's something like a prerequisite.
Like, look at this one. They sent a picture of the Sonic tattoo they have on their ass.
Right. Like, where's that ring? I don't want to know where the ring's at. I don't want to know the ring's at.
I do like how we had not one serious thing to say about that entire subject.
From GameSpot, McDonald's unleashes the grease-resistant McCrispy gaming chair. There's no shortage of branded gaming chairs on the market right now, and if you're looking for a seat that can provide plush comfort and protection from the terror of fast food grease, then McDonald's might have what you're looking for. I mean, it's called using a napkin, people.
Why do that when you can buy a whole chair?
Oh, and just wipe your hands on your armrest.
Grease-resistant, man.
The burger chain is throwing its golden arches into the market with the McCrispy, a gaming chair that combines questionable color aesthetics with an emphasis on storing your food while you're engaged in a round of Apex Legends or any of your other usual games, like Solitaire. What makes this chair stand out, aside from the fact that it comes with fries and dip holders, is that it includes a burger heat zone. That sounds immediately like a lawsuit waiting to happen.
to keep your quarter pounder toasty, phrasing, and ready for deployment straight into your mouth between gaming rounds. Holy crap. The other notable selling point is that the plush support features a grease-proof treatment on the leather materials. So any stray squirts of ketchup and mustard can be... I read that and I didn't see the ketchup and mustard afterwards. I'm like, oh. So any stray squirts of ketchup and mustard can be easily wiped off the surface. But the stain shame will remain forever. Other than that, this looks to be your standard gaming chair. The design is familiar. It's dressed up in McDonald's colors, and it contains a lumbar support pillow, which can slowly ruin your spine if you sit for too long. If you want to get your buns on it, I see what you did there, you'll need a little bit of luck, as McDonald's is giving four of these chairs away as part of a Facebook competition. I applaud you, McDonald's, for doing this. This is amazing. The article made me smile through and through. And I just wonder what's next. Is this going to be the introduction into the home appliance market that the fast food restaurants need? Like, is Burger King going to come out with a Craftmatic bed?
Yeah, where the king is just sleeping next to you the entire time.
That's so crazy. The headboard is just him with his arms spread out wide, just like the big smile.
Yeah, looking down at you all night, yeah. Watching over you as you sleep.
This chair, though, sounds to me like it's perpetuating the stereotype that gamers are fat, disgusting slabs.
I mean, like Donnie said, you could just get napkins.
Right.
Or you could invest in a grease-resistant chair so you never have to clean yourself ever again.
Now, I will say, based on what it says that it's designed in McDonald's colors, what colors do you immediately associate with McDonald's?
Brown and yellow.
I was going to go red, yellow, and white.
Yeah, I was brown and yellow.
That's the old one, like the 80s.
Yes, when I used to go to McDonald's as a kid, like Sundays after church, we would go to McDonald's, get the Happy Meal. It was a big deal. And then I actually developed a palate and realized I hate McDonald's. So every time I think of McDonald's, it's old school brown and yellow McDonald's.
Okay. You know what? I kind of forgotten about that whole color scheme.
Yeah, back in the day when they had the ashtray that was brown.
I think of yellow and red. The whole background is red. The golden arches, obviously, are yellow. But that's what I immediately thought of. It was going to be some ridiculously horrible red and yellow combination. But when I look at this thing, it's exactly what Blue just said. It's the old school brown and yellow, and it doesn't look terrible.
That's disappointing to me. I wanted my grease-resistant chair to also be obnoxiously colored.
I know. It's like they took this outlandish concept and said, but let's make it classy, okay?
I mean, this chair has it all. It's got a spot where I can put my damn fries in. It's got a cup holder on the side. Dare I say, I kind of want...
Are you going to go on Facebook and enter for the giveaway?
Oh, I'm totally entering into this. Hell, I just want yes. to be aware.
So here's the official how to enter to win the McCrispy. You head to the official McDonald's UK Facebook account. You find the McCrispy Ultimate Gaming Chair promotional video, should be at the top of the page. Click on the Learn More button just underneath the video. Click Next. Fill out the form with your full name, email address, and home address. And hit submit to enter. It's just that simple.
But McDonald's UK Facebook competition.
Yeah, it sounds like
so they're not shipping overseas, which is a shame because I feel like the American market are the ones that could really appreciate these types of chairs.
Nope, I'm still entering it. Unless they tell me I can't do it, then sorry.
Enjoy being on a mailing list.
I'm already on so many, it doesn't matter.
What's one more?
Right.
All right, so why don't we look at our top three new releases for the week?
All right, some big titles this week. First up is Atari 50, the anniversary celebration. It's out on the PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Atari 50, the anniversary celebration, takes players on an interactive journey through 50 years of video games via interviews with designers, developers, and industry leaders, documentary footage, product design documents, high-res original artwork, and a curated list of more than 90 playable games. Sonic Frontiers is out on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Worlds are colliding in Sonic the Hedgehog's newest high-speed adventure. In search of the missing Chaos Emeralds, Sonic becomes stranded on an ancient island teeming with unusual creatures. Battle hordes of powerful enemies as you explore a breathtaking world of action, adventure, and mystery. Accelerate to new heights and experience the thrill of high-velocity, open-zone, there's that word again, platform freedom as you race across the five massive Starfall Islands. Jump into adventure, wield the power of the ancients, and fight to stop these new mysterious foes. And last up is God of War Ragnarok, out on PS5 and PS4. From Santa Monica Studio comes the sequel to the critically acclaimed God of War from 2018. Thimblewinter, I hope that's how you say that, is well underway. Kratos and Atreus must journey to each of the nine realms in search of answers as Asgardian forces prepare for a prophesied battle that will end the world. Along the way, they will explore stunning mythical landscapes and face fearsome enemies in the form of Norse gods and monsters. The threat of Ragnarok grows ever closer. Kratos and Atreus must choose between their own safety and the safety of the realms. So looking at the lineup this week, what are you in for, Donnie?
I'm going the middle of the road here with Sonic Frontiers.
Oh, you finally made a decision.
I have made a decision. It's a game we've talked about. We've been on the fence. We've had our highs, our lows with the game. I want to see how it works. I'm interested in playing it. I think that there's more to the game than what we saw with the playable demo.
There better
so
be.
I hope so, right? I'm not spending $60 just to be like, well. So I want to do a little bit of a review first. I want to see what people have to say about it on YouTube. So that's going to be my choice. The Atari 50 sounds interesting, especially since it has interviews and stuff like that, original documentary footage, original artwork. The games I don't really care for. They're just not really entertaining to me anymore. So if they wanted to charge like maybe $19 for this thing, and I could watch documentary footage and stuff like that and play some games. Yeah, maybe. Maybe I'll pick it up. God of War Ragnarok? I've not really been a God of War person for a while. So I have the God of War game for the PS4. Haven't touched it. My son's played it. He's beaten it. I might get this for him. But for me, it's Sonic Frontiers.
All right. What do you think, Ryan?
Atari 50 sounds interesting just from my love of course, video game history, but I'm assuming that one of the 90 games is not Beat 'em and Eat 'em, so I'm a little on the fence.
That didn't make the curated list. And a side note, I looked it up on the Nintendo eShop, and it's $39.99.
Too much.
Sonic Frontiers. I guess I'm still on the fence. I would love to watch somebody else play it first before I really invest time into it. But I've never really gotten into a God of War game, and I love Norse mythology, so this might be the one that brings me in. So I think I'm going to try it. The gameplay sounds fun from what I've seen of other God of War games, and supposedly this is supposed to be, you know, bigger, grander, all those good things. So I think God of War might be the route to go.
Nice.
Blue, what about you?
So Atari 50, I can appreciate from a historical perspective. I do think a lot of the documentaries would be interesting to watch. And there is part of me that likes the idea of having a curated list of Atari games, which kind of weeds out all the crap and just brings out the highlights, even though honestly, I probably wouldn't spend much time playing them. But for $39.99, I don't think I'm a big enough Atari nerd to invest in that. Sonic Frontiers, I am super curious about. The early reviews seem to be saying that it's okay. It's not great, but it's okay. So I don't know if that's a good enough achievement for me to decide I want to invest in this, but I am kind of looking forward to seeing what people have to say about it as they get to spend, you know, a couple of weeks, couple of months in it. But I am all in for God of War Ragnarok. I really like the 2018 God of War, even though I was skeptical at first from their rebranding into Norse mythology. But the first game was fantastic, what I played of it, and I still need to go and finish it. So I am going to get God of War Ragnarok, but not until I finish the first game. So maybe I'll catch it on a Black Friday sale or something.
All right, so why don't we go ahead and tackle our main topic for this week from IGN, the 10 best-selling video games of all time. Games have always existed in a number-obsessed industry. Sega versus Nintendo defined a generation in the 90s, while today's comparatively mild console wars keep sales figures near the forefront of game-related discussion. New monetization models require new metrics for success: monthly active users, player retention rates, in-game revenue, etc. But one of the industry's biggest questions remains: what are the best-selling video games of all time? To answer this question, we set out to compile the most accurate list possible by reaching out to publishers and digging through financial reports, news stories, interviews, and more. The result is a following list of the 10 best-selling video games of all time. And just a note up front, pack-in games are counted towards sales totals, considering most games on this list were at one point bundled with a console. So number 10. Red Dead Redemption 2 with 46 million plus. The most recently released game to earn a spot in the top 10 is Red Dead Redemption 2. Rockstar's Western Epic has sold over 46 million copies as of September 30th, 2022, according to publisher Take-Two's latest financial report.
Number 9, Pokemon Gen 1 with 47 million. In Japan, the era-defining original Pokemon was available in two versions at launch, Red and Green, before coming to other territories as Pokemon Red and Blue. Yellow version, aka Special Pikachu Edition, followed between 1998 and 2000, depending on the territory. While Nintendo hasn't publicly shared a sales total for the first generation of Pokemon games, survey data from the Computer Entertainment Suppliers Association put the four versions' combined sales at around 45 million copies, approximately 31.05 million for Red, Blue, Green, and 14.64 million for Yellow. 1.5 million copies were also sold on 3DS through Virtual Console, according to Nintendo, bringing the estimated total of Pokemon's first-gen games to roughly 47 million.
At number 8, we have Super Mario Bros. With 48 million. The lifetime sales total of Super Mario Bros. Sits at just over 48 million units, according to CESA. It's the best-selling NES game ever, with an estimated 40.24 million copies sold on the console. Other versions factored into this sales total include the Game Boy Color remake Super Mario Bros. Deluxe at around 5 million, the Game Boy Advance's classic NES series Super Mario Bros. Around 2 million, and Virtual Console sales at around 0.66 million. In addition to the platforms listed above, various versions of the iconic platformer were released for arcade, Game & Watch, PC 88, Sharp X1, Nintendo's Play Choice 10, SNES via Super Mario All-Stars, NES Classic, and Nintendo Switch via Nintendo Switch Online.
Number 7, Overwatch, 50 million. Blizzard's hero shooter Overwatch has sold 50 million copies, according to Bloomberg report published in April of 2022. Overwatch elevated the hero shooter genre with a brilliant game design, thoughtfully crafted heroes, and continued esports support. In October of 2022, Overwatch has been replaced by its free-to-play sequel, Overwatch 2.
Coming in at number 6, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, 56.87 million. With 48.41 million copies sold as of September 30th, 2022, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe is the best-selling Switch game, according to Nintendo. Factor in sales of the original Wii U release, and that total rises to nearly 57 million. Good for the sixth best-selling game of all time.
At number 5, we have PUBG at 75 million. Given its critical role in the rising popularity of Battle Royale games over the last 5 years, it's unsurprising that PUBG has been such a massive sales success. Craft and creative director David Curd told The Verge it has sold 75 million copies of PUBG as of December 2021. That likely will be the shooter's final sales tally, as it went free-to-play a month later in January 2022. While free mobile downloads don't count towards its sales total, it's worth noting PUBG Mobile has been downloaded over 1 billion times as of March 2021.
Number four, Wii Sports, 82.9 million. According to Nintendo's official sales figures, Wii Sports is the company's best-selling game ever. While most entries on the list were bundled with a console at some point, Wii Sports was bundled with the Wii in nearly all territories at launch. At nearly 83 million copies sold, it's the top-selling single-platform exclusive of all time.
Yeah, maybe because it was the only good game for the Wii.
Oh, snap!
Coming in at number three, Grand Theft Auto V with 170 million. Grand Theft Auto V is the best-selling console/PC only game of all time. The top two entries on this list have mobile versions too. Sales of Rockstar's most ambitious GTA yet have surpassed 170 million units as of September 30th, 2022. That number compiles the game's sales totals from across three console generations and PC between 2013 and 2022. GTA 5 was the fastest entertainment release across all mediums to reach 1 billion, and it's since earned Rockstar and Take-Two billions more, making it the most profitable entertainment release ever, at least as of 2018.
Coming in at number two, we have Minecraft with 238 million. Minecraft has sold 238 million copies as of April 2021, according to Microsoft, though its sales total has certainly climbed higher in the year plus since. The company notes that figure captures the sales total across its 22 available platforms, and with film, Netflix, education, toy, and many other projects either completed or in the works, Minecraft has transcended the medium in a way few others have before it.
And number one, Tetris with 520 million. Arguably the most timeless video game ever created, Tetris sits comfortably atop the list of all-time bestsellers with 520 million copies sold, according to the Tetris Company. Number includes sales across all available platforms, with the majority coming from mobile. Hank Rogers, the Tetris Company's managing director, said Tetris had 425 million paid mobile downloads as of 2014. Tetris was initially released for the Soviet Union-developed Electronica 60 computer, and variations of the classic puzzler have since made for over 50 different platforms. Notably, it helped launch the Game Boy to success, eventually selling 35 million copies of Nintendo's handheld console. Modern variations of the classic are still being released. Tetris Effect Connected brought the puzzler to current-gen consoles with an emotional twist, while most recently in 2020, Sega released Puyo Puyo Tetris 2. The who's who of games.
There's a couple of sleepers on here that I didn't expect to see. When you imagine the best-selling games of all time, you could probably guess it would be Pokemon. You could probably guess it would be Super Mario, right. Minecraft. You would guess Tetris. I did not guess that Grand Theft Auto would be number three.
Really? With the way that its online presence is?
No, I mean, I knew that they've been bleeding it to death across three console generations
right.
Just keep releasing more and more stuff for it. But I had no idea, because like if you look at the number four game, Wii Sports has 82.9 million. And then the gap between that and Grand Theft Auto at 170 million. Mm-hmm. I would have put my money any day on Wii Sports still outselling Grand Theft Auto 5. It had such mass appeal, and it was bundled with the console and all that kind of stuff. So I had no idea that Grand Theft Auto 5 was that big of a juggernaut.
And if you think about it too, it's an average of about 55 million per platform that it's on. That's pretty impressive for Grand Theft Auto 5. Because it starts off on this list. There are games that are considered part of the top 10 that do not have 55 million sales. So at the end of the day, that's pretty darn impressive for Grand Theft Auto 5 to be able to pull all those numbers every single time it releases.
Right. And you made a good point. It's because of the fact that it's stretched over three different consoles.
Mm-hmm. And PC.
And even better. So that gives everybody a different avenue to play it, as well as play it online, as opposed to Wii Sports, which was just strictly for one specific console that didn't do that. I take that back. It did.
It did okay. Gangbusters, sir. But people bought it for Wii Sports. Let's be honest.
You're right.
obviously not everybody, so making a generalization here, but a vast majority of people went, wait, you can do bowling and golf at home? Let's play this thing.
Right.
But I mean, you're also making a good point because you look at Minecraft and it says it's available across 22 different platforms, and Tetris was available on over 50 different platforms. So Grand Theft Auto 5 has been able to accomplish what it has across 3 console generations and PC.
And Wii Sports did it on one.
Yeah, and Wii Sports did it on one. It's all very impressive.
And of course, one of your favorite games of all time is on this list.
Right. Mario Kart 8. It's a great game. 48.41 million copies sold. So when you think about it, when you go to the online lobbies, that's a lot of available opponents. I'm here for it.
Just think, again, the flex you could have if you won one of those big tournaments.
I mean, with that many other opponents, I'm not winning jack.
Just saying, Blue, flex and oh man, it's like being on roids right there.
It's all about the pump.
But I can't currently move my arms, so it doesn't matter.
I was kind of surprised of some things that were left off of the list. Like,
yeah,
where are the Resident Evil games? Where are the...
I think the super, super successful Resident Evil games get like 5 million.
Okay.
They're not giving like a cumulative series number. It's per game.
Per game. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So then where's the Final Fantasy VII remake numbers? Where's the...
Again, I think 5 million is about where that ended up.
The original Final Fantasy VII, though, considering it was on not only PlayStation, but PC, I wouldn't be surprised to see this on the list.
I mean, look at these numbers, though. 56 oh, yeah. million. The gamer base now is so much bigger than That's it true. Used to be that the when there are retro games on here, I think it's extra impressive.
Yeah, like Pokemon and Super Mario Brothers.
Right.
And yeah. Tetris. I'm not surprised to see Pokemon on here, though, because they included the entire generation.
And you know, there were lots of rich kids who said, but mom, I need the red one and the blue one and the exactly. yellow one. But me...
The yellow one sucks. You don't get to choose your Pokemon. You have to go with Pikachu at the beginning. That's stupid. But Pikachu, of course, is the most popular Pokemon of all time. So everybody was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, you were probably the only one who complained.
I probably was.
Did you have yellow?
No, I had blue growing up. Okay. And I know I'm usually the resident rich kid here. Mm-hmm. No, I did not have all of the versions, so... Take that.
I can just see Ryan screaming at Christmas. I said I wanted the gray one. I didn't want the blue and red one. I wanted the gray one.
Gotta live in Japan to get the green one, big guy.
I thought you were a rich kid.
Yeah. You can get it.
Why didn't
in.
You travel to Tokyo? Come on, mom.
Now, I never played the original Pokemon games. In fact, the only Pokemon game that I think I've ever played was Pokemon Go.
I think of these top 10 best-selling games of all time, I think I've played maybe half of them. I have not played Red Dead Redemption 2, nor Overwatch, nor PUBG, nor Grand Theft Auto 5, nor Minecraft.
I am in the same list, but I have played Minecraft.
I've dabbled with Minecraft, you know, with my kids. It's amazing with what people can create in something like Minecraft.
Oh, my God, right?
Yeah, I don't think I have the patience anymore. So I like when games like Super Mario Maker come out, it's like I don't want to make a game. I don't want to make a level. I want to play the damn level. That's all I want to do.
Yeah. I really like the idea of being able to make a level, but then when you sit down and do it in about 30 seconds, I'm like, nope.
Yeah, exactly. Not for me.
You were the kid during Excitebike that made the worst level possible and made your friends play it, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I just couldn't get into it. It's like, oh, okay, I'll put something over here. And it just, it wasn't functional. It's like, I've got no future as a game designer. I don't know why I'm doing this.
Is there any game on the list that obviously if like you had control over everybody, you would love to see represented?
If you could say everybody go out and buy this game right now.
Right. Conceivably.
I don't know. It's kind of a hard because every single game brings its own uniqueness to what it can offer.
Right.
Like with Tetris being a puzzle game, with Minecraft being a creative game, Grand Theft Auto and Red Dead Redemption being very story rich. possibility driven. And what I mean by possibility driven is like you can do so many things in there. Wii Sports, obviously, with sports, PUBG and Overwatch being shooters and Mario Kart being a racing game, everything in here offers a unique experience to the player. And I can't say that one specific game in here would hold more sway over any of the other ones. Except for Overwatch. Overwatch can die in a fire.
Huh? I think you bring up an excellent point, though, is that this list, compared to like what's the best game of all time, you see a lot of representation from, you know, one particular genre. This one covers pretty much it all, right?
Right. These are basically the titles that are kings in their individual genres.
Donnie, you've convinced me that this is a good list. I'm comfortable with the representation on this.
Yeah, it's a good list. You know, you're going by units sold. It's not about one particular person's perspective on what's the funnest game of all times. It encompasses everything from sports to RPGs to platformers to shooters to puzzle games. It's, dare I say, perfect.
In some ways, you could substitute this as the best games of all time list because it is gamers voting with their dollars.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely.
So there you go. Hard data that says that Tetris is the best game of all time by a large margin.
Even though 425 of those are mobile. Okay, sorry.
Oh. You shut your mouth.
Before we move on, let's take a quick break to talk about our sponsor. The segment is proudly sponsored by the Elitist Podcast. It's a show where three friends and occasional guests play games about video games, including trivia, game show games, and more. Here's this week's trivia question. The newest God of War title released this week, but the new generation, dubbed the Norse Era, appropriately broke a tradition of North American release dates for the franchise. What was the original era's tradition, and why was it so apropos? Tune in to the Elitist Podcast this Wednesday to hear the answer. You can find the Elitist on your favorite podcast platform, or we'll have links in the show notes. So what do you think, guys?
Well, the old one was Greek mythology.
Correct.
So there has to be something with that particular calendar that would fit this, but I can't think of it.
Yeah, I have no idea. I think I played all of the earlier God of War games up until it started going on the PSP, but I can't for the life of me remember what time of year they released.
So they released in
redacted
being the month of.
Okay.
Wow, that's a stretch.
It is.
Right?
But apparently they used to release every
redacted. All right. Well, whatever makes sense to your marketing team.
All right. Thank you for coming, students. Please take your seats. Welcome back to Professor Rybrandt's Gaming History 101. And in today's lesson, we're going to discuss a Japanese video game designer and musician whose eccentricity would make Kojima blush. Per the request of the Wizard of Zardoz, today we'll be diving into the life and genius that is Kenji Eno. So out of curiosity, have you guys heard of Kenji before?
Yeah, but no. I don't really know much about him.
And I think that's one of the points I wanted to kind of make at the beginning. So I know there's a lot of Japanese game designers and musicians that are household names outside of Japan. I mean, if you think about it, like Miyamoto, Kojima, you know, Sakaguchi, Yuji Naka, Sakurai, and, you know, a myriad of other ones. They're all kind of, they've created a niche for them, not a niche, but a name for themselves outside of Japan. And these icons of the industry have seen success making games for the entire world, and they're universally loved. But as you can imagine, there are heroes that never really made a name for themselves outside of their native countries. And one example of them is the highly intelligent and extremely quirky Kenji Eno, who is sadly probably more known for his rebellious marketing techniques than his games. But we'll get into that. So Eno was born in Arakawa, Japan in 1970, and he was identified at a pretty early age as being a highly intelligent child. So he ended up attending a school for gifted children. But unfortunately for him, much of his life was affected by an occurrence that happened when he was in his year in elementary school, his mother ended up disappearing under strange circumstances. And so he was actually raised just by his father. Kind of a tragic beginning story for Eno. But one of the outlets that he saw for himself had to do with his huge interest in video games. He was cited as saying that Pac-Man was his first game, but really, realistically, Space Invaders was his first truly great experience when it comes to games. Loved the sound effects, loved the visuals, loved the gameplay itself. So it really blossomed this love when it comes to video games itself. And that ended up kind of influencing him into beginning to program his own games. And eventually he won a regional contest with his game called Toa Doko Murder Case. what you'll see is that he is, in fact, a fan of horror games, and certainly that translated later to in life. But he was kind of eager to set out on his own and start creating. So he ended up dropping out of high school at the age of 17. And he actually landed a job at Canon for a little while before making his way to the Japanese video game company Interlink. At that company, he found that it was a great way for him to begin a career in video games and have some creative autonomy in contributing to games. But one of the things that he noticed is that he kind of found himself wanting to be the creative director of games rather than aiding to the vision of someone else's game. So in 1990, he ended up leaving Interlink to create his own company called EIM Limited. Now, you may be familiar with some of the titles that they produced, including Parallel Worlds and the extremely sought after by collectors of the NES, Panic Restaurant, which I want a copy of that game so bad. And, you know, while it was certainly a step up for him through Interlink, he kind of find himself wanting to make games that weren't just based off of contracts that he was getting. He wanted to make games that were uniquely his. So not seeing that as being a viable option to make money, he ended up dissolving the company in 1992 and actually began consulting for an automotive manufacturer. So it was like, you know, F this, SM out, right? And started making money for his own. But after a two-year hiatus from the video game industry, he found his interest in making games kind of rejuvenated from attending Macworld 1994. And this kind of promptly convinced him to create his own video game development company called Warp. He assembled a small team of developers that included some names that you might recognize. So Fumita Ueya, who went on to develop for Shadow of Colossus. Takashi Nozou, who helped create Final Fantasy Advent Children. And Ichiro Itano, who developed Macross. So some big names started from humble beginnings working with Eno. You know, at Warp is where Eno's reputation for being a maverick and his eccentricity really took hold. Here's some highlights from his time at Warp. So for the game Short Warp, Eno had the game shipped with condoms in the packaging.
Oh, wow.
What year was this?
94, I think. Is that 94, 95?
Yeah. Baller move.
It's a little much, maybe even for the 90s, but all right.
Right. The game Real Sound shipped with a bag of herb seeds for some reason.
Okay.
Not that kind of herb.
Quote unquote herb seeds.
I think you had to specify.
And he notoriously burned bridges with PlayStation when he went to a press conference in 1996 for the game Enemy Zero and ended the presentation with a PlayStation logo morphing into a logo of the Sega Saturn to announce that the game would be exclusive to Sega.
Oh,
that's a bold move, Cotton.
Interestingly enough, he was actually able to sell games a lot for Sega consoles, so Dreamcast and Saturn, but yeah. It was a big middle finger to PlayStation.
Right? Talk about I don't give a strategy.
Yeah. And the last one is probably the craziest of all. So he made a special edition of Enemy Zero limited to 20 copies. And it came in a giant wooden crate. And the items included clothing that was worn by the quote-unquote booth babes at Tokyo Game Show.
So the early version of selling bathwater.
Exactly.
Right.
Now, get this, though. Kenji delivered all 20 special editions himself to each individual buyer. And with no shipping company, he literally loaded the truck himself and drove it to each person's house.
So they were all local.
Well, yeah, they're all Japan. Yeah. So Warp itself was a company not just known for their, obviously, their crazy marketing plans, but they also made some really great games. So D, have you guys ever heard of the game D?
I have.
It's, of course, an interactive movie adventure horror game originally created for the 3DO, but was later ported to PlayStation, Sega Saturn, and I think Dreamcast. Or maybe, no, it was MS-DOS. And so the plot of it is that the, you know, the main player goes into investigate a hospital after learning her father went on a mass murdering spree and barricaded himself inside.
It happens.
Yeah, it does, you know. Yeah. And then the next part happens a lot, too. Hospital morphs into a castle upon her arrival.
Yeah, you see it 1,000 times.
Oh, happens all the time. Now, famously, though, Eno publicly lambasted Sony for not printing enough copies, which is likely what led to his disdain for PlayStation. So that's probably where all of the FUs came from.
I like this guy.
Oh, I do, right? Enemy Zero was a horror-themed adventure game for the Sega Saturn. Players assume the role of an astronaut who awakens from cryogenic sleep to find his spaceship overrun by invisible creatures who are hunting and killing the ship's crew. And finally, one of the most unique games from Warp, and I think this is actually really cool, was developed for the Saturn and the Dreamcast, and it was called Real Sound. Have you guys ever heard of this game?
No.
I think it's a Japanese-only exclusive game, so I'm not surprised that it's not well-known, but it was actually specifically designed for blind players in mind.
Okay.
So it's constructed as an interactive radio drama or, you know, kind of an audio game book, if you will, where the player spends the majority of the time listening as the story unfolds, and a critical forks in the plot, a set of chimes will ring, alerting the player that it is now their job to choose the course that the plot will take. And the choice that is selected is confirmed with the controller and the plot kind of resumes. I think it's super cool to be able to make a game that everybody can enjoy, right? You're not just limited to folks who are visually able to see the game. You can make games for people who can't and still be able to enjoy them. So,
well, accessibility options are a big thing now, but he was concerned about it back then.
Right, exactly. Now, sadly, with Eno's company, Warp, it would eventually close shop in 2000. And despite trying to create another development house called From Yellow to Orange, Eno would never see the success that he saw with Warp. And he ended up passing away in 2013 at the age of 43 as a result of complications from hypertension.
Hmm.
Yeah, kind of a sad ending to an interesting story about
That's very young.
Right, for sure, for sure. And I will say this to kind of, you know, sum things up. His fearless nature and eccentric marketing, it definitely left an impression on the games industry that is felt even to this day. And however, like many gifted people, Eno's time on Earth ended far too soon. Pour one out for Kenji Eno. You were a maverick in your time. Would have loved to see what you could have came up with if you stuck around.
Is a candle in the wind.
So thank you for attending today's lesson. Big thank you to Wizard of Zardoz for requesting today's lesson. And a reminder, if you do have ideas for a story you'd like to hear, send us a message at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com and we might feature your suggestion. So that'll do it for us today. So thank you for listening to episode 47 of Gamers Week Podcast. And a big thank you to the Retro Game Club Podcast, the Elitist Podcast, and Love Retro BTW for sponsoring this episode. Don't forget to check out their links in the show notes. And if you want to connect with Gamers Week, follow us on Twitter at Gamers Week PC. Email us at gamersweekpodcast@gmail.com. Visit our merch store at gamers-week-podcast.creator-spring.com. Or if you want to do it the easy way, follow the link in the show notes. And join us on Patreon at patreon.com/gamersweek. And finally, since you made it all the way to the end of the episode, please leave us a rating and a review to let us know how we did. We really do value your feedback. And while you're there, consider subscribing on iTunes, Spotify, or your podcast platform of choice.
Please, sir, we want some more downloads.
Please, Council Bluffs, we want some more.
Council Bluffs.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut.
Welcome to Gamers Week Uncut, patrons with benefits. This is the unscripted, patron-only bonus cast with less editing and more dirty jokes. We don't know where the conversation will go, but we're sure it will be weird.
This fish just went right on my nipple, and I'm just like,
I Google Street Fighter 6. The first search result that comes up is people think they can see Ryu's dick in the Street Fighter 6 reveal.
Listen up here, kids. You're not going to want to get one of those VDSTDs things, right? Make your dick fall off. When you go, grab a pro. You'll be doing it for America.
That was perfect.
If you want to hear weekly episodes of our patron-only bonus cast, join us at patreon.com/gamersweek.